Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Over the last few weeks, several Irish citizens have been detained in Israel after flotillas that they were on were intercepted on their way to deliver aid in Gaza. And one such person is Irish author and activist Nisha Dolan, who was aboard one of the Thousand Madeleines vessels. And she joins me now here in studio. You're very welcome home and you're very welcome to the show, Nisha. Can we start, before we come to your own experience, and we've obviously had huge developments in the Middle East over the last week, and what looks like a pretty precarious peace is there at the moment. Are you hopeful?
Well, precarious is the word. Today, for example, Israel killed at least 3 Palestinians. And I'm conscious, too, that even if we return entirely to the status quo before the invasion of Gaza in October 2023, there was a report, for example, in June 2022 that said over half of Gaza children were contemplating suicide because of the conditions of the siege. This was before any of the current cycle of events. And so, famously, no justice, no peace. And so I don't think we will see true peace until we see an end to the colonial occupation. And I don't see that in an immediate sight. Certainly the peace deal doesn't provide for it. Quite the opposite. It cedes control over Gaza to Western powers with little voice for Palestinians.
If they're able to create a role there for Palestinians, but perhaps that is in a long term as opposed to a short term solution, would you be comfortable with that?
I suppose the question isn't whether I am, it's whether people on the ground having to live with these terms are, and I don't feel I can answer that for them. And I definitely don't want to dampen any sense of celebration or hope or resilience currently happening in Gaza. But I think we in the West always have a responsibility to ask for more and push for more and refuse to accept what our government wants to sell us in order to silence us, because we're here for full solidarity with Palestinians and for their self-determination. As Irish people, we know that there's a difference between an end to war and true dignity and rights. That's why we had the Troubles. And so I think we need to continue our solidarity.
So we're a long way from getting to a point where you feel Palestinian people have that self-determination, have that dignity and have that quality of life. In terms of your own journey over the last month, Nisha, tell me about, first of all, how you got to be on the flotilla.
I applied for the SMUD. I'd known about the flotillas before. And so when the opportunity came up, I did. And I said, I'm not particularly invested in being on a boat because I don't think the purpose is that individuals get to in that sense. I think it's about offering your skills and letting them be allocated wherever it's most useful. And it was judged that mine would be most useful on the boat. So I was assigned to go from Tunisia, but then they had to cancel loads of boats. So then I briefly went home to Ireland and then back to Italy to join a Thousand Madeleines boat instead. The way that one happened was one of the Danish organisers reached out to me because he'd heard it hadn't worked out with SMUD.
So when you talk about skills, what they're looking for, people who can man the boats, they're looking for perhaps people who can cook, for people who have communication skills, who have a media platform.
Yes, I was not necessarily chosen for my sailing chops. I was seasick for the first 3 days. But there are so many aspects to this mission, and land support is vital too. And quite often Palestinians do a lot of the land support because it's so risky for them to participate. The conditions for them in jail are so much worse. Even with foreign passports, they can be targeted quite easily based on their identity. And there are still some Palestinian participants, one of the most prominent being Kieran Andreou, the Navarra journalist. But the number of Palestinians who couldn't take that personal risk, for example, because they had family in the West Bank that they might be debarred from seeing. Instead, they're the people manning our boats, or the people who helped receive us in Jordan afterwards. They're the people providing legal advice throughout. And that was vital, too. So everyone has a role in this movement.
So there's a whole support network far beyond just who's on the flotilla.
Yes, it would not be practically possible to have it without land support. And even if it were practically possible, there would be little point because no one would hear about it, including people in Gaza. The reason people in Gaza heard about this and were able to get some kernel of hope from it and knew to try to fish that day when the Israeli Navy was distracted with interceptions, all of that was because of the media attention too.
Talk to me about your own sort of personal tipping point, that moment where you decided, I want to apply to be on the flotilla. I want to take my own personal sense of protest further.
I'd tried everything else, and I've been going to Palestine protests for over a decade, but especially when I was in Berlin when the genocide began, because, well, at least the most recent cycle of the genocide, there are conceptions of it that could start well over a century ago, but because the German government was directly arming Israel, I really felt a responsibility to up the ante there. And then since I came home in January, I was continuing involving myself in activism here, but I'm a believer in trying everything, and I saw value in taking this international coordinated direct action beyond a national level, and so I wanted to be a part of it.
So tell me about then the preparation, the physical and maybe the mental preparation for going on to that flotilla.
I did a lot of research on everything that had happened to previous flotillas, and I did that before I even applied, and I think that really helped to cope with everything while I was there. And part of why I'm not actually all that shaken after prison is that I knew exactly what happened, A, to previous flotilla participants, and B, to Palestinians in those prisons. And I think quite often people get traumatised when they're thrust into situations entirely beyond their control that they couldn't have anticipated in any way. Whereas I went in with a clear picture in my mind of how it could look and with the sense that I had made a choice. Now, the choice comes quite a bit before the potential consequence, because once you're on the boat,
there's no turning back.
Well, yeah, you don't want to derail seven people or more from the mission because you chickened out. So once you're on the boat, you kind of have to see it through. But I didn't feel that I was taken aback that this genocide state wasn't very nice to a bunch of white Europeans. It actually was entirely aligned with my expectations of how Israel would act.
And actually just describe the flotilla to me. There was eight of you on it, obviously. What did you have at your own disposal?
Actually, it was seven on my boat. I misspoke. But we had our sailboat itself, which I believe is still confiscated in the hands of Israel. We had medicine and baby formula packed mainly in the stern cabins and in the cockpit. And I know people say, oh, it's just symbolic, it's just for media attention, which isn't bad. It's not bad to draw attention to the situation in Gaza. But when you're carrying these concrete forms of aid that you see every day, for us, it was very real. We were hoping right until the last second that we could reach them, or at least that they could see us on the shore.
Did you actually think there was potential, honestly, for you to break the blockades?
Yes, because I'm a human being and because I know revolutionary history, and you never see the big change coming until it comes. And you always have to be just on the side that's likely to bring about the big change, and you can't say when it will be. So I was hoping, yes.
And what was the atmosphere like on the flotilla amongst the seven of you that had ventured on this journey, on this activism, on this protest?
Very concerted, very determined, and we had our ways of coping. I am a humour as mechanism person, so when one of the guards threatened us with pepper spray in our cell, I was like, joke's on him. The other day they were threatening tear gas, and that's not everyone's sense of humour, but that was how I coped. Other people were maybe a bit more stoical, and other people were a bit more leaning towards emotional catharsis and talk things through, but everyone had their way to contribute to group morale, and the mix of personalities, I think, helped more than if we'd all been the same.
Tell me about then that moment, I suppose, where you know you're getting closer to the point where there is this heightened possibility, and some would say inevitability, that the Israel forces, Israel troops were going to intercept.
Well, it changes the kind of discussions that you're having. You talk a lot more about strategy, what to do if you get abducted. Do you sign anything? Do you eat? We agreed, most of us, to go on hunger strike, so we went eating for the 5 days. But I think as well, it makes you much more focused on things on the ground in Gaza because you're conscious that you're nearing it. And so it's this Schrodinger's consequence, where on the one hand you're thinking about what if we're stopped, but you're also thinking about how exactly are we going to get the aid when we get there. And so we were planning those two contingencies simultaneously while following this hint towards a ceasefire. And it was the strangest moment to suddenly lose communication with the outside world, because the first I heard that the ceasefire was really happening was from the Irish consulate during a 15-minute visit a day after I'd been illegally abducted.
Talk to me about the interception. What exactly happened at that point?
They used a large boat to run circles around us and then eventually ram us, so go in front so we couldn't go any further. And then a small boat, some armed officers hopped out. They tore down our Palestine and Irish flags, not the French one. And then they led us to a large, dark grey Israeli military vessel, which they then sailed for around 12 hours to Ashdod port, and then they put us in jail.
And what was the jail like? And how were you treated? And how were you treated, or were you treated in any way that was perhaps different to how other prisoners or other detainees were treated?
Well, the prison was Katziot, and there are so many testimonies from Palestinians about what it's like for them there, especially since October 2023. So, for example, in our cell, they had ripped out all the electrical fittings, and that's because this was the start of a flurry of collective punishment at that time, which involved severe beatings, attack dogs, batons. And so we never saw anything more than a pale shadow of that. But comparing with Samud people, we did report a couple of things that they said they didn't see much of. So, for example,
Samud obviously being the first flotilla intercepted.
Yeah, so a woman on our flotilla I was spending a lot of time with, she got a black eye. She was hung from the ceiling by her handcuffs and beaten repeatedly. She's a Yemeni Jew, and we think that had an impact on why she was targeted. But Samud, and this is just anecdotally, I didn't speak to all several hundred people on it, but it seems that maybe the guards had a sense we didn't deter them enough since there's this other wave, and did what they could within their petty constraints.
You know, there has been a lot of criticism of people who go on these flotillas who say, look, it's either virtue signalling, it's making a lot of noise, but it's actually achieving very little. And what it's ultimately doing is putting people at risk for what in the end? What do you say to that criticism?
Has there been a lot of such criticism from prominent Palestinian voices, or is this coming from internet commentators who don't have very much of a stake in the matter at all? Because that's all I've ever heard it coming from. And I would say, first of all, we're open to suggestions for other forms of direct action that you think would be more effective. We would like to be constructive as opposed to destructive. But also, every platform is a chance. If you use your platform only to talk about what happened to you, well, it's still documenting the manner in which the Israeli state operates, which has implications for Palestine solidarity. But you can also use it to say, it's so much worse for Palestinians, the ceasefire is fragile, we need to keep fighting. And I think that's the agenda that each of us is going into these interviews with, that we cannot be complacent and let the illusion of a ceasefire make us stop.
So do you feel then that you did achieve something by taking part in this flotilla that was intercepted, by spending time in that Israeli jail, and by coming back here now to Ireland? And if so, what was it?
I don't know if I could assess direct impact. I would say that I felt I was on a better side of history than if I hadn't done it.
Explain that to me.
I would rather be participating in direct action that attempts to counter my government's participation in the genocide than be at home in my own comfort, not doing enough.
So would you say, look, rather than sitting around criticising me, get out and do it too?
Or not that, but do something. Yes, please, whatever energy you're using to criticise other people's attempts to help the situation, just find something else. And maybe it's a better thing. Maybe it's better than our thing. I'd be very happy if someone else found a more effective way to help Palestinians.
I wonder, when you come back here to Ireland and you're here in studio sharing your story today, but I presume you go back to normal, to real life again as much as possible. Is there any sort of guilt around doing that?
I don't think guilt is helpful here, because it doesn't materially aid anyone else's situation. It's about continuing to use what resources and power you have for the cause in a long-term way. For example, I'm speaking at a central bank protest next Wednesday because our central bank is still complicit in the genocide. And so you can keep pushing always. And I don't think guilt is appropriate here so much as solidarity, because it's not about individual morality. It's about our collective liberation being entwined. And so I will not be free until Palestinians are free. And so it's not through charity that I'm doing these things. It's because I would be incomplete as a human being if I weren't.
So your activism will continue?
Yes.
All right, Anisha Dolan, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us today.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.